thank you for being here today. I'm delighted. I was delighted to be invited back. And the joy of letting go is one of my favorite topics. You can't tell, but I have a lot of tattoos. And I keep saying I have to get let go tattooed somewhere. I go on retreat, and I spend half my time on retreat thinking about my next tattoo, and I never get them, but it's interesting. The joy of letting go, that phrase comes from James Barras. Some of you know him. He's a teacher in Northern California, and he travels. He may have been here because he travels quite often. Yeah. So he does a class. He's done a class for many, many, many years called Awakening Joy, which I've done and can facilitate. And one of the chapters in his book is called The Joy of Letting Go. And letting go is so important. In fact, the Buddha talked about it, letting go. There's one line I love from one of the suttas, and it says, the sublime state of peace has been discovered by the Tathagata, the Buddha. That is liberation through not clinging. So sublime peace is found, this liberation through not clinging. And I remember going on a retreat a number of years ago. It was like 10 or 12 days, and I came out with just one sentence: to cling is to suffer. To cling is to suffer. And when craving is, clinging is. And to cling is to suffer. And I want to just say one thing about the word suffering, because dukkha is often translated as suffering. That's the typical translation. But dukkha means much more than suffering. And I know suffering was not necessarily a word I identified with. I struggled, I'd had problems, but suffering, people over there suffered. I didn't really suffer. But dukkha means being dissatisfied, being off kilter, being unhappy with the way things are. That's dukkha. Being dissatisfied with what's in front of you, being uncomfortable with the present moment, that's dukkha. Whether you call it suffering or not, I might say suffering, but I mean the expanded definition of it. I mean dukkha in all its entirety. So, to crave, to cling is the genesis of dukkha. You know, that's the second noble truth, that there is this discomfort, and the root of this suffering is this wanting what we want when we want it. Never happens. And it's not just, and I think somebody in here when we were going around mentioned it, it's not just letting go of the difficulties, it's letting go of the things we cherish that are going away. And in fact, the Buddha said, if you see goodness, let it go. If you see rightness, let it go. It's clinging to anything and everything. You know, we give it all up. And I'm sure most of you have heard of Ajahn Chah, a monk from the Thai forest tradition. He lived, died in the last century, a teacher of Ajahn Sumedho. There's a collection of his writings called Food for the Heart. It's a book that's about this thick. It's really excellent. And I read it a number of years ago, and I finished it, and I went, he could have just said let go, because basically that was the whole book. But you know, if it were easy, this room would be empty. None of us, we'd all be somewhere else letting go of everything, but we're not, so we're here because it's not that easy. And then finally, Bhikkhu Anālio. I'm sure many of you know Bhikkhu Anālio. He is also a monk. He's German. He's a great scholar, a great, great scholar. He's written the Satipatthana, the Direct Path to Realization, a very scholarly work on the Satipatthana, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. He's written so much. And he said, I sat a retreat with him last year, and he said, I couldn't believe it when he said it, but it's true, I think. He said, the sum of the Buddha's teachings, and if you just imagine the Pali Canon, which is this thick, he said, the sum of the Buddha's teachings can be summarized in five letters in English, L-E-T-G-O. And it's true. So L-E-T-G-O. But as I said, it's not easy. If it were easy, we'd all be doing it. And whenever I run into something in an invitation in the Buddhist teachings, an invitation to let go, an invitation to loving kindness, to compassion, to just being fully present, and it's difficult, I always ask what gets in the way. So before you can let go, you have to recognize what you're holding on to. And we hold on to so many things, whether we recognize it or not. We are conditioned people. We were conditioned, the Buddha said it, we are conditioned beings. We are conditioned by our families growing up, the things we were taught. We were conditioned by our school. We're conditioned by the society we grew up in that tells us who we are and whether we're good or not good or right or wrong. We hear all these things all the time. And whether we consciously absorb them, oftentimes we unconsciously absorb them because we hear them and we think, oh, that's important, that's not important. Or the way we're treated, you know, if we say something and it doesn't land well, then we go, oh, I'm not going to say that again. I'm not going to say that again. And so we develop ways of being in the world that are attached to particular ideas. So we have these ideas of how it's supposed to be, how we're supposed to act, how they're supposed to act. And it doesn't always go according to our script or our plan. And that's when we run into that wall. And that's when it starts getting painful. And then perhaps the self-doubt starts, or the negative self-talk, or the anger arises, all the emotions that come. And so all these things happen based on sometimes things we don't even recognize or don't even see, these old, old stories that are so deeply embedded that sometimes take years to uncover. I've been doing this practice for a long time, and it was just a few years ago, now it's maybe 5 or 6 years ago, that I uncovered one other thing about, you know, why I behave the way I behave. And sometimes we don't even get to know why, but just have to deal with the way it is, with the actions of today. Why do I keep doing this? Why can't I let go of this? So we let go of, there's a subtlety to this practice. There's a continual investigation. So we cling to these ideas of should and should not, and right and wrong, and good and bad. We have ideas about our identity, who we think we are, who I want you to think, I want you to see me, and I want you to think about me a certain way. So I had created a persona about I always struggle with this, how I think you should see me. You know what I mean? You know? And I remember creating a persona. I thought, okay, this is who I'm supposed to be. This is who I need to be in order to have people like me. It wasn't anywhere close to the person I was, but that's who I created this idea. And in fact, when I started a job, I worked as a temp for a number of months, and then they hired me, and they gave me a nameplate, and it said Little Mary Sunshine. Because everything was always good all the time. Because I thought that's how I had to be. And that was so painful. Because it's never good all the time. And you can't be honest. You can't be authentic. You can't be real. I can't tell you it's a crummy day. Because then you would think, well, why is it a crummy day? And not that you, because I also mind read and fortune tell. Because in the brain. And I was so attached to those ideas, and it was so painful. So idea of identity that we cling to. We have resentment, we have anger, all these things that we carry from way back. They did this, they did that. You know, and it is all these different things. It's not true for each of us, but sometimes some of these things resonate. You know, and why can't we let stuff go that happened 20, 30, 40 years ago? Sometimes the wound is deep. Sometimes the wound is incredibly painful. Absolutely. But carrying it, we can tend to the discomfort today. We can tend to the sadness or the grief today, but let go of the story. It's the stories we carry that feed that papancha, that proliferation of thought that just keeps going and going and going. So letting go of those resentments, you know the line, resentment is us taking poison and expecting the other person to die. You know, that's what that is. And so can we let go of that? Can we let go of the way things should be? Because, you know, they're all doing it wrong, and I know the right. If they never ask us, do they? We have all the answers, but they never ask us. I heard a couple people mention this, and it's something that I hear a lot. Letting go of busyness. I don't know about here in the UK, but in the United States, people are busy. Busy, busy, busy all the time. The scheduling that goes on. And people make appointments for phone calls. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to call you like the olden days. And you're not going to be expecting it. And if you're busy, just don't answer. It's okay. You know, but it's like everything is so rigid. And there's this addiction to it sometimes. You know? Stuff. We hold on to stuff. You know? I still have... Language books I learned from, if I need to study this language again, I can find it on the internet or get an app for it. I don't need to lug these books around. And I have all my books from graduate school, all my archaeology books, because my degree's in archaeology. And I think I have this idea that people are going to come in and they're going to look at my books and they're going to go, ooh, I'm impressed. That, I think, is why I hold on to them. So I'm stuck on that idea of that identity. Now I know what it is, so I laugh at it. But there was a time when I was like, I can't let go. It was really painful to let go of that stuff. I still have them, and I still look at them, and I go, really, Mary? Really, Mary? It's like, but it's okay. Now, you know, it doesn't cause suffering, whereas before it was really painful. Now I just go, oh, Mary. Without the negative self-talk, which is another habit of mind, that we get into, this judging, this critical voice. Martine Batchelor wrote a book called Let Go, which is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful book. And she delineates all these places that we get stuck. The judging mind, the comparing mind, the counting mind, the this mind, the that mind. It's really helpful, really a great book. But she lays out all these things. Expectations. That's another place we get stuck. Expectations. Whether we realize it or not, you know? And there's a line I love, and it says, the greater my expectations, the lower my serenity. So if I have all these expectations, how often are my expectations met? Probably 0 to 10%. And even if they are met, they never quite fix me. Even if I do get the prize, even if I do get exactly what I want, I have not yet lived happily ever after because of it. Yet I have this idea that that's what's going to happen. If I win the prize, then it'll all turn out okay. Instead of recognizing we only have this moment, we only have what's right here. So there are all these places we get stuck. all these places that we hold on to without even recognizing it. You know, it's the story of the second arrow. There's the first arrow, there's the discomfort of the moment, which is whatever, or the discomfort of the moment, and then all the stories around it of why this happened and why that didn't happen and blah, 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 blah. And so to begin to recognize it's oftentimes the stories, what we think things should be, how they should unfold, the identity, the fixed ideas, the storytelling, the expectations. Just begin to let go and recognize that story, and that's where we begin to let go. We begin to let go of the story. And there's a it's really, letting go is really all about renunciation, which is a scary word. Because it has, for me at least, it had that connotation of you have to give it up so you'll be a better person. You know, whether it's, you know, whether you think it's good for you or not, you have to let it go. You have to renounce it. For me, it was like Lent growing up in Catholic school. And it's like, you know, you have to give this up. And it's like, I'll give up homework. I'll give up cartoons, whatever, you know. But just because you're supposed to do it. I was clueless about the big picture of it as a child. But that was the youthful or the childlike idea that I kept about renunciation. But actually, and renunciation is talked about in the second factor of the Eightfold Path, and in right intention, wise intention. Renunciation means recognizing the suffering caused by the action, or recognizing the suffering that's caused and being willing to let it go, because you see the liberation that's available when you let go. It's a practice of renunciation. And Rick Hansen, who has written Buddha's Brain, which is another wonderful book, he talked about healthy letting go. Not pushing or pulling or getting over something. Just releasing. Releasing the habits of mind. Yeah, it's all about coming into the present moment and letting go of right here, right now. Seeing when we start moving in that direction of the thought, and sometimes we don't even have to play it all the way out. We know where it's going to end up because we've done it for so many years. And it's just part of who we are. Renunciation is releasing what is painful or harmful for ourselves and others. And there's a freedom in that. There's a tremendous freedom when we're not attached or entangled. The Buddha used the word entangled and disentangle a lot. And so we're disentangling ourselves from all these things we're caught up in. And letting go leads to clarity. And we have the clarity to see that everything is impermanent. So why are we holding on to things that only go away anyway? Then, and having that clarity to see that things are impermanent, that there's no fixed self, we're just this conditioned being. All conditioned things are impermanent. And that there is dukkha. There is the human condition. And so we don't need to try and fix the human condition because it's just here. And when we let go of things, we create more space. There's a... You know, when you're contracted and you're holding on to things, you're like, at least I am, I'm squinched over and my shoulders are tight and are up around my ears and it's just like, ah. But then we can let go. I remember a number of years ago, I was on a retreat. It was a long retreat. And the first couple of weeks, it was just really pleasant. And then it started shifting. And I remember in one sit, and I was like, I found myself all of a sudden, I kind of came to, and I was like this, bent over, trying to push my way through this really dark curtain, like a theater curtain that's dark. And a blackout curtain, and I started trying to push my way through it to get back to where I was. And instead, it's just like, oh, let go. You're right here. The breath. It's like if you all just take a deep breath and then just go. There's so much ease. There's so much freedom there when you can let go. So how do we do this? Bhikkhu Nalio again talked about, when he talks about in the full foundations of mindfulness, the fourth foundation of mindfulness, he primarily talks about the hindrances and he talks about the factors of awakening. And hindrances, I'm sure you know, they're all clinging. The hindrances are what get in the way of our liberation. When the hindrances are present, we can't be free. When the hindrances are gone, there's awakening, there's freedom, there's liberation. And so it's all about letting go of these hindrances. It's craving, aversion, not wanting what's present, restlessness and worry. What's going to happen? Dullness, checking out, you know, sloth and torpor. It's, for me, that's about checking out of what's happening. And then doubt, which is just like, what is this stuff anyway? Am I good enough? Is it good enough? What are, who said, you know, who was Buddha anyway? Whatever. So, you know, really that stuff that all plays with the mind, and the way we move through this and the way we let go is kind of starts with the factors of awakening. The first factor is mindfulness. We have to pay attention, bringing our awareness, what's happening right here, right now. Which is why practice is so important, because we have the time to spend really what's happening right here, right now. What's this moment? What's this moment? You know? And then investigation or inquiry. The mind, I think this is from Martine again, the mind notices and looks into its nature, which leads to wisdom and insight. So this investigation, what is this? It's that old story again. Or it's my wanting things to be different. I want the blue one, not the pink one. Why is this store closed? Why won't they like me? Why didn't I get invited? What's wrong? Instead of tending to what's here, the sadness, the loss, the joy, because sometimes it's challenging to be with the pleasant experiences as well. So there's the investigation. There's the energy, the effort it takes. It takes effort and energy. The four efforts are seeing when the mind is caught up in, what is it, unwholesome, caught up in craving, caught up in aversion, letting go of that, recognizing when the mind is free of that, and maintaining that. That's the effort and the energy we bring to the practice again and again and again. We let go. You may get caught up 1,000 times. You can let go 1,001 times. There's no use-by date. There's no expiration on this practice. The Dalai Lama said, check in with your spiritual practice every 10 years or so. I'm like, what? Because, you know, we live in, I call it, we want a microwave miracle. I want it now. Now. But it doesn't happen now. We didn't get here. How old are you? That's how long you've been doing this. That's how long it's taken for you to get where you are today. It's not going to be done by 5 o'clock this afternoon. I'm sorry. No money back guarantees, right? So it's, but the, it's a process, and it's an ongoing thing. I have been in my life. I was raised in New York City, and I was very sarcastic, because that's a way of life in New York City, sarcasm. Any of you know Joe Pesci and My Cousin Vinny, that old movie. Anyway, it's sarcasm, sarcasm, sarcasm. And it was how you operate in New York. Everybody's like, yeah, you are, what am I? And I moved to California, and I was talking to someone a couple of weeks ago, and they go, oh, they're much more sensitive here. And I realized that, and I started, people told me I made them cry because they didn't understand what I was, how I was behaving in the world. But for me, sarcasm was a way to fit in, because I never fit in. I never felt I fit in. And it was like, oh, I'm good at this. I'm funny. Oh, I belong. And then all of a sudden, no, that doesn't work. I'm like, I want to let that go. How do I let, I use the practice of wise speech, because it talks about sarcasm in there. It's unkind. It causes harm. Oh, it took me 20 years. I started looking at the idea of letting it go over 20 years ago. Just the reflect, ooh, can I be, you know, can I do something different? Because sometimes we go, I can't help it, I was born this way. Oftentimes we think so because it's implicit. It's, we don't even know that it's conditioning. It's so deep. So the willingness is incredibly important in this practice too. The willingness to go, you know what? I'm committed to not causing harm, then I'm going to commit to walking this path of letting go of what causes harm to others. And if my sarcastic mouth causes harm to others, I am going to try to let go. And it's shifted over the years. It still slips out every once in a while, because I'm not done yet. I'm not dead yet. I'm not done yet. But I have to continue and to recognize and not beat myself up over it. Just go, wow, deep, deep, deeply embedded, deeply entangled. So to have forgiveness for ourselves as well is incredibly important. So it takes patience. It takes effort. It takes mindfulness. And then when you are able to see and let go, the factors of awakening, we move into joy, tranquility, collectedness of mind, equanimity. So there's this path. When you can begin to let go, even if you let go for 5 minutes, be aware of the ease that's there, because oftentimes we're so focused on the dukkha, we're not aware of the joy. So when you do let go, recognize the ease. Recognize the ease. And so it takes patience. It takes effort. And I'm gonna read one more thing. This is from Ajahn Sumedho. And he talks about, and it's called Let Go. You may know this. It's lovely. He says, the practice of letting go is very effective for minds obsessed by compulsive thinking. You simplify your meditation practice down to 2 words, letting go. Rather than try to develop this practice and then develop that and achieve this and go into that, understand this and read the suttas, study the Abhidhamma, learn Pali and Sanskrit, the Majjhimika, the Prajnaparamita, get ordinations in the Hinayana, Vajrayana, Mahayana, write books and become a world-renowned authority on Buddhism. Instead of becoming the world's expert on Buddhism and being invited to international Buddhist conferences, let go, let go, let go. I did nothing but this for about 2 years. Every time I tried to understand or figure things out, I'd say, let go, let go, let go, until the desire would fade out. So I'm making it very simple for you to save you from getting caught in incredible amounts of suffering. There's nothing more sorrowful than having to attend international Buddhist conferences. Some of you may have the desire to become the Buddha of the age, radiating love throughout the world, but instead, I suggest just being an earthworm, letting go of the desire to radiate love throughout the world. Just be an earthworm who knows only 2 words, let go, let go, let go. Let go, let go, let go. And he says, it's important, the important part of this practice is effort, constant and resolution in the practice, and patience. even when the going is rough. It's patience. He said he did it for 2 years. Patience, especially when you don't like what's happening. Patience, you know? So that's what I want to offer for this morning. This practice of letting go. So we're going to sit, we'll walk, we'll sit, we'll walk. And as you drop in, just be as present as you can. Maybe keeping the factors of mindfulness, bringing yourself to right here, right now, being mindful. What is this? What thoughts come up? And you're going to be as mindful as you can be, and then that thought's going to come up. I got here a couple of days ago, and I did this, I did that. And every once in a while, something, oh, I should have done that. I should have done this. And it's like, And then I go, it's fine. Let go. It's fine. And then I was thinking, I go, oh, that's a nice example to share in the day long tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. And I was brushing my teeth. And as I was brushing my teeth this morning, you should have done that. And I'm like, oh, look, it's still there. And it's like, and then you let go again. And you let go. And when you let go, there's ease. I'm going to tell one more story, and then we'll sit. And this last story is years ago. I was a director of a meditation center in California, in Los Angeles. And I used to teach, and it was an old, old building. And the old air conditioner, that was very noisy, and it was hot in the summer. And where you sat as the teacher, when the air conditioner turned on, it would just blow right at you. And it was like annoying and cold after a while. And before the air conditioner turned on, it would go click, click. So I'd hear the click, click and immediately go, ugh. So I'm leading a meditation. People are sitting and I'm guiding it. And I'm going, let go, be present. And I'd hear the click, click. And I go, ah, I hate this. I hate this air conditioner. I'm going to freeze. It's awful. And then it's like, come back to your breath. And it's like, and as you know, halfway through this, and it's just, I'm programmed, I'm conditioned. As soon as I hear that click, click, I'm conditioned. And it's like, I hate it. And then I said, why don't I do what I'm suggesting the people meditating do? And that's let go of the story about how much I hate this air conditioner and how cold I will be, and just come into the present. Oh, what's it actually like right now? It's actually fine. I'm not cold. But when we get caught up in the story, we're so far away from the actual moment, we're not aware of reality. And so the practice of letting go is an invitation to be present, to be connected with reality. There is nothing else but right here, right now. We spend so much time elsewhere, but the invitation is to be right here. Absolutely right here. So that's what I want to invite you to do during the practice, both the sitting and the walking. Be here. If there's noises, oh, why can't they be quiet? Don't they know we're meditating? Allow that to be part. Oh, look, there's some annoyance there. You can't help what emotions arise. It's how you work with them in the moment. You know, let go. Let go, let go. Maybe just use that as a little let go, as a place to return to. Oh, let go. What is this right here? What is this? You know, what is this? And always I invite you to remember, you cannot do this wrong. You can't do this practice wrong. You can't make a mistake. You're going to do it perfectly for whatever your practice is today. So be gentle with yourselves as you do this. Be really kind to yourself. Be gentle. Be forgiving. Make the effort to stay with the practice. Don't just start daydreaming, but stay with the practice and recognize that the mind will get lost and bring it back. The mind will get lost and bring it back. And be with the body. Be in, not just in the head, but come into the body as well. What's it feel like in your body? Maybe dropping below the storyline and feeling the sensations in the chest, in the feet, in the hand, being with the breath.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.